Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
An Iowa woman who grew up with a gangster in town is coming to speak about her new book, And There's a Tie to Marion County. Let's go in depth with Betty Brandt Pasek from the Twin Cities.
Well, Betty, where are you from?
I grew up in Fairbank, Iowa.
Now, where's Fairbank?
Oh, it's about 35 miles northeast of Waterloo.
And where do you live now?
I live in the Twin Cities now.
Okay, and you've written a book that's set in Fairbank, and we're talking to you because you're coming to Marion County soon. First, what's the title of the book?
Gangster in Our Midst.
And what's it referred to?
It's about the town's gangster. An Italian-American man came to town in the 1920s. After marrying a local girl who had gone to Chicago to make a better life for herself, she met this Italian man. So when he shows up in Fairbank, it's after they've been married, and it's to introduce him to family and friends. The gangster, the man very quickly reveals he had some odd characteristics. The town starts to follow the newspapers. Pretty soon they figure out that they believe he's a gangster for Al Capone. Sometimes when he comes to town, they think it's on the lam when he stays for 30 days or so. But 90 years later, nobody really seemed to know for sure. Or most people that I interviewed anyway, didn't know for sure whether he was really a gangster for Al Capone or not.
So there's this mystery about him all of those years, and nobody ever asked him or nobody called the police?
Well, the town marshal was in touch with, obviously, with county law officials. And how much he knew about him, I don't know. I interviewed his daughter, who's now 102 years old, and she said if he knew who he really was, her father never said. But nobody that I talked to seemed to know that he really was a gangster for Al Capone.
He was just
a mystery man in town.
Well, some of our listeners are young enough probably not to know who Al Capone is. Do you deal with him in any detail in the book and the gang?
Yeah, I do. I do. Actually, Al Capone is in my book quite a bit. Al Capone was, as you know, the head of the mafia, Prohibition Mafia in Chicago during Prohibition and into the 30s. So about 13 years or so, he was the head of the mafia and had many people working under him, and was responsible allegedly for the St. Valentine's Day massacre that occurred in Chicago when seven individuals from the Bugs Moran gang was killed. That was his biggest competitor, and his intention was to put them out of the gang out of business and totally dominate the area.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation with Betty Brandt Pasek from the Twin Cities about her new book about growing up with a gangster in town.
This girl from Fairbank met the gangster in Chicago and then brought him back home. Did he have any visible means of support?
None that anybody could determine, but he drove the nicest car. He always drove brand new Lincolns, had money to spend for all kinds of things. When he pulled money from his pocket, he had rolls of bills anyway. And he had banker's hands, so it didn't look like he was engaged in any kind of hard physical labor. When some of the town people that he played cards with at the tavern pressed him on occasion about where did he make all his money, apparently at some point in time he said he was a bookkeeper for Al Capone. But he was a bookkeeper only for his charities, the good part of his business.
Okay.
So he did admit that much. But when I researched him in FBI and police reports and newspaper accounts, he was also arrested for murder on occasion. His name was Louis LaCava, and his family, his father and his brothers, were all listed in Chicago's Who's Who in Crime. They were all part of involved in criminal activity during Prohibition. So ultimately, the feds nabbed Louis in the months preceding or the years preceding Al Capone's trial, and he ended up testifying at Al Capone's trial that, and my idea is that it sealed the deal as far as Al Capone going to prison, because Louis LaCava had a cloth journal that he kept track of Al Capone's income. Louis LaCava's name was the only other name listed on Al Capone's bank box. So his testimony, in my mind, was the thinker that sealed the deal, that the numbers, Al Capone's income was authentic, and which justified the federal government charging and putting Al Capone in prison on tax evasion fraud.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation with Betty Brandt Pasek from the Twin Cities about her new book about growing up with a gangster in town.
Well, now, you grew up in this town, right?
I did.
And what was it like? Was it this common knowledge or just rumors of it, and then you later decided to do some real research on it? Is that what's happened?
Well, my primary family, and there were 10 of us, moved into the town in the mid-50s. And I remember hearing about a gangster, but I was 9 years old at the time, and I didn't know what a gangster was. A couple of my brothers worked for auto dealerships in the town, and they said they had seen Louis LaCava come into the shops when he needed to get his car repaired. But I really didn't hear that much about him. He lived a very low-key life, tried to not draw any attention to himself. He and his wife, their main residence was in Manhattan, so when they came to town, it was for short durations, during the 30s anyway, and then to visit family and friends and perhaps be on the lam or go on the lam for a while. But then they'd always return to Manhattan. But in 1968, they actually bought property in the town and built a house and began to share their residence. In the summer, they lived in Fairbank, and in the winters, by then, they relocated to the Miami area. So we had him full time in the summertime, beginning in the 60s. So by then, most people didn't even know who he was anymore.
Do you remember him?
I never met him.
Wow. But
never met him.
So why go digging this up now?
Well, I was writing my second book in 2010, and I was interviewing locals. This was a book of family history. And I was interviewing locals and asking them what they thought of us Brandt kids growing up in Fairbanks. And eventually, for many of these residents, the conversation drifted to talk about the gangster. And it happened enough that I thought, wow, I wonder if there's a story here. So when I published that book in 2015, I went back to these residents and asked them, what made you think this man who had odd mannerisms was a gangster for Al Capone? And they told me about some of his odd mannerisms, like when he and his wife were in town, they stayed in a house on the east end of Main Street. Sometimes he would choose to walk downtown instead of drive his big fancy Lincoln. And if he was going to walk, he would first summon some of the town children that he had befriended. And they would surround him as they walked down the center of Main Street. And, you know, Fairbank is a typical small town with the big, wide, dirt Main Street. A perfectly good boardwalk was on either side of the street that everybody else walked on. But he and these children walked down the center of the street. Early on, it was horse and buggy traffic and Model T traffic all surrounding him. But they walked down the center of this Main Street. And the people in the town thought that he did that to protect himself in case someone from Chicago or New York followed him to Fairbank, because the gangster rule was you didn't shoot at a gangster's family, a wife or children. And he did the same thing when he went to the, when he wanted to go see a movie at the Opera House. He would pay for any child's ticket that wanted to come in there or go see the movie with him. And then he'd plug himself right in the middle of them.
Well, he sounds like a fascinating character. Sounds like a great read. And you're coming to Marion County.
Yes, I am. I'm coming there on the 17th to talk at the Historic Society. The event is actually going to be held at the Methodist Activity Center at 308 East Robinson Street, because they didn't have enough room at the Historic Society to house this. So it's been moved next door, I think, is where this is.
Well, there's a lot of history buffs around here. I bet you get a good crowd.
Well, that's what I'm told. So I'm hoping that there'll be lots of questions. And, you know, I'll be talking about, I'm invited there to talk about a specific case that happened in Knoxville. It was the murder of two elderly sisters on a Knoxville farm during Prohibition, when Knoxville rose to national fame for its CSI investigation and conviction based solely on ballistic evidence. So that's the specific story that I'm going to dwell on and talk about Knoxville's claim to fame in that regard.
Well, and I'm purposely not talking about that because I want people to come and they'll hear it from you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, well, I look forward to your event.
And will you be there that evening?
Well, yes, I will. I can't resist.
Oh, good. That sounds great.
Well, I look forward to meeting you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks to Betty Brandt Pasek for contributing to the program.
For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In-Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In-Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In-Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.